me, and then nodding toward the door. The first thing you have to do is get a med cart in your room. I salute. On it. Med cart in my room. I push open the door, giving her a big smile that lasts me all the way back to the elevator. Pulling out my phone, I send a quick text to Jason. Get this, dude. A truce with that girl I told you about. He's been getting a real kick out of the stories I've been telling him about her. He cried from laughing over the door alarm incident yesterday. My phone buzzes with his reply as the elevator slows to a stop on the third floor. Must be your good looks. Clearly not because of your charming personality. Pocketing my phone, I peer around the corner to check that the nurse's station is still empty before sliding off the elevator. I jump when a loud crash reverberates out from an open door. Ow, shit, a voice says from inside. I peek in to see the dark-haired dude from earlier wearing a pair of flannel pajama pants and a Food Network t-shirt. He's sitting on the floor next to an overturned skateboard, rubbing his elbow, clearly post-wipeout. Oh, hey, he says, standing up and picking up the skateboard. You just missed the show. You doing stunts in here? He shrugs. No safer place to break a leg. Besides, Barb just went off shift. Valid point. Can't argue with logic, I laugh, raising my hand to do a small wave. I'm Will. Poe, he says, grinning back at me. We grab chairs out of our rooms and sit in our respective doorways. It's nice to talk to someone around here who's not mad at me all the time. So what brings you to St. Grace's? Haven't seen you here before. Stell and I pretty much know everyone who comes through. Stell? So they're close? I lean my chair back, letting it rest against the doorframe, and try to drop the B. sepatia bomb as casually as I can. Experimental trial for B. sepatia. I usually avoid telling CFers because they make it a point to avoid me like the plague. His eyes widen, but he doesn't move any farther away. He just rolls the skateboard back and forth under his feet. B. sepatia? That is rough. How long ago did you contract it? About 8 months ago, I say. I remember waking up one morning having more trouble breathing than usual, and then I couldn't stop coughing. My mom, being obsessed with every breath I've taken my whole life, took me straight to the hospital to run some tests. I can still hear her heels clicking loudly behind the gurney, her ordering the people around as if she were the chief of surgery. I thought she was obsessive before the results came back. She always overreacted to every loud cough or gasp of breath, keeping me out of school or forcing me to cancel plans to go to doctor's appointments or to the hospital for no reason. I remember doing a mandatory chorus performance back in third grade and coughing right in the middle of our shitty rendition of This Little Light of Mine. She literally stopped the concert mid-song and dragged me off stage to go get a checkup. But I didn't know how good I had it. Things are so much worse now than they were then. Hospital after hospital, experimental trial after experimental trial. Every week it's another attempt to fix the problem, cure the incurable. A minute without an IV or not talking about a next step is a minute wasted. But nothing is going to get me back on a lung transplant list. And every week we waste, more of my lung function wastes away too. It colonized so freaking fast, I tell Poe, putting the front legs of my chair back on the ground. One minute I was at the top of the transplant list, and then one throat culture later. I clear my throat, trying not to let the disappointment show, and shrug. Whatever. No sense dwelling on what could have been. Poe snorts. Well, I am sure that attitude, he mimics my shrug and hair flip, is what's driving Stella crazy. Sounds like you know her well. What's that about, anyway? She said she's just a control freak, but... Call it whatever you want, but Stella's got her shit together. He stops rolling the skateboard and gives me a big smile. She definitely keeps me in line. She's bossy. Nah, she's a boss, Poe says, and I can tell from the expression on his face that he means it. She's seen me through thick and thin, man. Now I'm curious. I narrow my eyes. Have you guys ever... hooked up? Poe says, tilting his head back to laugh. Oh, man. No way. No, no, no. I give him a look. She's cute. And he clearly cares about her. A lot. I find it hard to believe he never even tried to make a move. I mean, for one thing, we're both CFers. No touching, he says. This time he's giving me the calculated look. Sex isn't worth dying for, if you ask me. I snort, shaking my head. Clearly everyone on this wing has just had fine sex. For some reason, everyone thinks that if you've got a disease or a disorder or are sick, you become a saint, which is a crock of shit. CF might actually have improved my sex life, if anything. Besides, the one perk of moving around so much is that I don't stay anywhere long enough to catch feelings. Jason seems pretty happy since he got all sappy with Hope, but I don't really need more serious shit in my life. Second, she's been my best friend practically my whole life, he says, bringing me back to the present. I swear he's getting a little teary-eyed. I think you love her, I say, teasing him. Oh, hell yeah, I fucking adore her, Post says like it's a no-brainer. Would lie down on hot coals for her. I'd give my lungs if they were worth a shit. Damn. I try to ignore the jealousy that swims into my chest. Then I don't get it. Why? She is not a he, Post says, cutting me off. It takes a second for the penny to drop, but then I laugh, shaking my head. Way to bury the lead, dude. I'm not sure why I'm so relieved, but I am. I stare at the dry erase board hanging on the door directly above his head, noticing a big heart drawn on it. If Stella's trying to keep me alive, too, she must not completely hate me, right?
Chapter 7. Stella. Just give me 10 minutes, I say, shutting the door and leading Will and Poe out in the hallway. I look around his room as my app downloads onto his phone, seeing the note I slipped under his door this morning sitting on top of his bed. Text me when you have the med cart, 718-555-3295. I will be over this afternoon to set everything up. I knew that one would be tricky, especially because Will and Barb are clearly not on the best of terms, so she wouldn't advocate for him, but he went above her head and managed to charm Dr. Hamid. I pick up the note, noticing he's drawn a tiny cartoon along the edge of an angry Barb in her signature colorful scrubs, pushing a med cart and screaming, "Don't make me regret this!" I shake my head, a smile slipping onto my lips as I put the note back down and walk over to the actual med cart. I rearrange a few pill bottles, making sure one more time that everything is in the same chronological order as what I programmed into the app after cross-referencing his Donkey Kong-covered regimen. I double-check his laptop to see how much longer for the download to be complete from the link I sent him, trying not to breathe more than I have to in this bee-sapacia-laden room. 88% complete. My heart jumps as I hear noise outside the doorway, and I yank my hand away from the keyboard, worried we've been caught. Please don't be Barb. Please don't be Barb. She should be on her lunch break, but if she's back already, getting a jump on her Monday afternoon rounds, she'll murder me. Will's footsteps echo back and forth in front of the doorway, and I tiptoe to the door, almost pressing my ear up against it. But I'm relieved to hear only the two of their voices.
You wiped everything down, right? Poe says. Of course I did. Twice. Just to be safe.
Will shoots back.
I mean, clearly, this wasn't my idea, you know.
I adjust the isolation gown over the top of my disposable scrubs and yank open the door, squinting at them through my goggles. Poe spins around on his skateboard to face me.
Man, Stella, did I tell you how fine you look today?
He and Will break out into laughter for the third time over my makeshift hazmat suit. I glare at them before glancing down the hallway. Still clear? He pushes off on his skateboard and slowly rolls past the nurse's station, peering over the desk. He shoots a thumbs up in my direction.
Just hurry up.
I'm almost done, I say, ducking back into the room and closing the door. I eye the med cart, breathing a sigh of contentment over how meticulously organized it is. But then I see the desk his laptop is sitting on, which is so not.
I march over and grab a handful of colored pencils, putting them safely back in the pencil holder they belong in. I straighten up the magazines and sketchbooks, making sure they are in order by size, and as I do, a piece of paper falls out. It's a cartoon boy who looks a lot like Will holding a pair of balloons and forcing air into deflated-looking lungs, his face red from the effort. I grin, reading the caption under it. Just breathe. It's really good. Reaching out, I gently trace Will's lungs, like I do with Abby's drawing. My gloved fingertips land on the small cartoon of Will, his sharp jawline, his unruly hair, his blue eyes, and the same burgundy sweatshirt he was wearing on the roof. All that's missing is the smile. I look up at the wall, noticing he has only an old cartoon hung up right above his head. Grabbing a tack from a small jar, I hang his cartoon on the wall below it. The laptop dings, and I blink, quickly pulling my hand away. Upload complete. I spin around, walking to his desk and unplugging his phone. Scooping everything up, I pull open the door and hold out the phone to the non-cartoon Will. He stretches to take it from me, fixing his face mask with the other hand. I built an app for chronic illnesses, med charts, schedules. I shrug casually. It'll alert you when you need to take your pills or to do a treat.
You built an app? Like, built it?
He cuts me off, looking from the phone to me in surprise, his blue eyes wide. Newsflash, girls can code. His phone chirps, and I see the animated pill bottle appear on his screen. Evacaftor, 150 milligrams, I tell him. Damn, I already feel better. I raise my eyebrows at Will, who is giving me a look that's not mocking for once. He's impressed. Good. My app is so simple, even boys can figure it out. I saunter off, swaying my non-existent hips confidently, cheeks warm as I head straight to the public bathroom on the other side of the floor that no one uses. The light flickers on as I lock the door behind me. I rip off my gloves and grab some disinfectant wipes from a round bin by the door, scrubbing my hands down 3 times. Exhaling slowly, I rip everything I'm wearing off, the booties and the cap and the face mask and the scrubs and the gown. I shove them all into the bin, pushing them down and closing the lid before running to the sink. My skin is crawling, like I can feel the B. sepatia looking for a way to slip inside and eat away at me. I go to the sink and turn the handle, hot water pouring loudly out of the tap. I grip the smooth porcelain, looking at myself in the mirror, standing there in my bra and underwear. The handful of raised scars lining my chest and stomach from surgery after surgery, my ribs pushing through my skin when I breathe, the sharp angle of my collarbone made sharper by the dim lighting of the bathroom. The redness around my G-tube is worsening, an infection definitely starting to form. I'm too thin, too scarred, too... I meet my hazel eyes in the mirror. Why would Will want to draw me? His voice echoes in my head, calling me beautiful. Beautiful. It makes my heart flip in a way it shouldn't. Steam begins to cloud the mirror, blurring the image. I look away, pumping the soap until it overflows in my hand. I scrub my hands and my arms and my face with it, washing everything away and down the sink. Then I apply some heavy-duty hand sanitizer for good measure. I dry off, opening the lid on the second trash can and pulling out a bag of clothes that I carefully put there an hour earlier on my way to Will's room. Once I'm dressed, I glance in the mirror one more time before carefully leaving the bathroom, making sure no one sees me exiting. Good as new. Lounging on my bed,
I eye my Monday to-do list warily, but keep scrolling through social media on my phone instead. I tap on Camila's Instagram story, watching for the millionth time as she waves happily to the camera from a kayak, holding the phone over her head to show Maya paddling frantically behind her. Most of my time since the secret hazmat operation has been spent vicariously absorbing Cabo through my classmates' Instagram stories. I went snorkeling in crystal blue waters with Melissa, sailing with Jude to see the Arch of Cabo San Lucas, basked on the beach with a seemingly not too heartbroken Brooke. Just as I'm about to hit refresh again, there's a knock on my door and Barb pops her head in. She eyes my med cart for a second, and I'm pretty sure I know what's coming. Have you been in Will's room? His setup looks awful familiar. I shake my head. Nope, wasn't me. A perk of being a goody-two-shoes is that Barb will probably believe me. I'm relieved when my laptop dings with a FaceTime notification, Poe's picture popping up on the screen. I freeze before answering it, silently willing him not to say anything about Will as I spin my laptop around. Look who just got back from lunch break. Luckily, his eyes immediately travel over to see Barb standing in the doorway, and he holds back whatever comments he's about to make. Oh, hey, Barb. He clears his throat. Barb smiles at him as he starts rambling on about pears flambé with some kind of reduction. I watch as she slowly closes the door, my heart pounding in my ears, until I hear the gentle click of the latch sliding into place. I exhale slowly as Poe gives me a look.
Listen, I get what you're doing. It's nice.
He looks right into my freaking soul, as usual.
But this thing with Will, is it really the best idea? I mean, you of all people know better.
I shrug, because he's right. I do know better, don't I? But I also know more than anyone how to be careful. It's only a couple of weeks, then I'm out of here. He can quit his treatment then, for all I care. He raises his eyebrows at me, smirking.
Senate-level dodge, nicely done.
He thinks I'm crushing on Will. Crushing on the most sarcastic and annoying, not to mention infectious boy I've ever met. Time to change the subject. I'm not dodging anything, I say. That's your move.
What's that supposed to mean?
He asks, narrowing his eyes at me because he knows full well. Ask Michael. I shoot back. He ignores me and changes the topic right back.
Please don't tell me that the one time you're finally interested in a guy, he's a CF-er.
I just helped him with his med cart, Poe. Wanting someone to live isn't the same thing as wanting them, I say, exasperated. I am not interested in Will. I don't have a death wish. And if I wanted to date an asshole, there are plenty without CF to choose from. It's ridiculous. Isn't it?
I know you, Stella. Organizing a med cart is like foreplay.
He studies my face, trying to see if I'm lying. I roll my eyes and slam the laptop shut before either of us can figure out if I am.
They're called manners.
I hear Poe's annoyed voice shout down the hallway to me, followed by the sound of his door slamming shut a few seconds later. My phone vibrates and I pick it up to see a text from Will.
Lover's spat.
My stomach flips again, but I wrinkle my nose, about to delete the message, and then the 4 o'clock reminder for the Aflo vest pops onto my screen, a tiny animated pill bottle dancing. I bite my lip, knowing Will just got the same notification. But will he follow through?
Chapter 8. Will. I carefully shade Barb's hair, leaning back to look at the drawing I did of her holding a pitchfork, As I'm nodding in contentment, my phone begins vibrating noisily on my desk, making the colored pencils dance. It's Stella, on FaceTime. Surprised, I reach over to pause the Pink Floyd song on my computer, swiping right to answer the call. "I knew it," she says as her wide eyes come into view. "Where's your Aflo vest? You weren't supposed to take it off for another 15 minutes. And did you take your crayon? I'll bet that's a no." I fake an automated voice. "We're sorry. You have reached a number that is no longer in service. If you feel you have reached this recording in error..." "You can't be trusted," she says, cutting into my killer impression. "So here's how this is going to work. We'll do our treatments together, so I know you're really doing them." I tuck the pencil I was using behind my ear, playing it cool. Always looking for ways to spend more time with me. She hangs up, but for just a second, I swear I saw her smile. Interesting. We stay on Skype for most of the next 2 days, and surprisingly, it's not all barking orders. She shows me her technique for taking pills with chocolate pudding, which is freaking genius and delicious. We breathe in our nebulizers and do our IV drips and mark off treatments and meds together in her app. But Stella was right a few days ago. For some reason, me doing my treatments is helping her to relax. Gradually, she's becoming less and less uptight. And, I won't lie, even after 2 days, it's way easier to get out of bed in the morning. I'm for sure breathing better. On the afternoon of the second day, I start to put on my Aflo vest, jumping in surprise when Barb bursts through the door, ready for the usual 4 o'clock fight that we have over it. She always wins the brawl to get it on after threatening to confine me in isolation, but that doesn't stop me from trying to get out of it. I slam my laptop down, abruptly ending my Skype call with Stella, as Barb and I stare at each other in a classic old Western standoff. She looks from the Aflo vest to me, the steel in her face melting away into a shocked expression. "I don't believe my eyes. You're putting on your Aflo vest." I shrug like it's no big deal, glancing at the compressor to double-check that everything is hooked up right. It looks fine to me, but it's definitely been a while since I've done this myself. "It's 4 o'clock, isn't it?" She rolls her eyes and pins me with a look. "Leave it on for the whole time," she says before sliding out the door. The door is barely closed before I fling my laptop open, calling Stella on Skype as I lie upside down off my bed, pink bedpan in one hand for mucus disposal. "Hey, sorry about that, Barb," I start to say when she picks up, my voice trailing off when I notice the dejected expression on her face, her full lips turning down into a frown as she stares at her phone. "You okay?" "Yeah," she says, looking up at me and taking a deep breath. "My entire class is in Cabo for our school senior trip." She turns her phone around to show me an Instagram picture of a group of people wearing bathing suits and sunglasses and hats, posing happily on a sandy beach. She shrugs, putting her phone down. I can hear her vest vibrating through the computer, the steady hum in time with mine. "I'm just a little bummed I'm not there." "I get that," I say, thinking of Jason and Hope and all that I've missed out on these past few months, living vicariously through their texts and social media feeds. "I planned the whole thing this year, too," she says, which doesn't surprise me. She's probably planned every step she's ever taken. "And your parents? They'd let you go?" I ask, curious. Even before the bee sapacia, my mom would have axed the idea. Vacations from school have always been needle times for me. She nods, curiosity filling her eyes at my question. "Of course, if I was healthy enough. Wouldn't yours?" "Nah, unless, of course, a hospital there is claiming to have some new magical stem cell therapy to cure bee sapacia." I sit up and cough a whole bunch of mucus into my bedpan. Grimacing, I lie back down. I remember why I kept taking this off before it could really get going. "Besides, I've already been. It's beautiful there." "You've been? What was it like?" she asks eagerly, pulling the laptop closer. The blurry memory swims into focus, and I can see my dad standing next to me on the beach, the tide pulling at our feet, our toes digging into the sand. "Yeah, I went with my dad when I was little, before he left." I'm too caught up in the memory to process what I'm saying, but the word dad feels weird on my tongue. Why did I tell her that? I never tell anyone that. I don't think I've even mentioned my dad in years. She opens her mouth to say something, but I quickly change the subject back to Cabo's scenery. This isn't about him. "The beaches are nice, The water is crystal clear, plus everyone is super, super friendly and chill. I see the dejection in her eyes growing over my rousing review, so I throw in a random fact I heard on the Travel Channel. Oh, but man, the currents are so strong there. You almost never get a chance to swim, except for maybe, like, an hour or two every day. You just broil on the beach most of the time, since you can't go in the water. Really? She asks, looking skeptical but grateful at my attempt. I nod eagerly, watching as some of the sadness slides off her face. We vibrate away, a comfortable silence settling over us, except, of course, for the occasional hacking up of a lung. After we finish using our AfloVests, Stella hangs up to give her mom a call and check in on her friends in Cabo, vowing to call me back in time for our nighttime pills. The hours pass slowly without her smiling face on the other side of my computer screen. I eat dinner and draw and watch YouTube videos just like I used to do to kill time pre-Stella's intervention, but it all feels extra boring now. No matter what I do, I catch myself glancing over at my computer screen, waiting for the Skype call to come in as the seconds tick by at a glacial pace. My phone vibrates noisily next to me and I look over, but it's just a notification from her app telling me it's time to take my nighttime meds and set up my G-tube feeding. I look behind me at my bedside table, where I've already laid out a chocolate pudding cup and my meds, ready to be taken. Like clockwork, my computer screen lights up, Stella's long-awaited call coming in. I hover over the accept button, stifling my smiles as I wait a few seconds to pick up, my fingers tapping away on the trackpad. I click accept and fake a big yawn when her face appears on my screen, casually glancing at my phone. Is it time for the nighttime meds already? She gives me a big smile. Don't give me that. I see your pills behind you on the bedside table. Embarrassed, I open my mouth to say something, but shake my head, letting her have just this one. We take our meds together, then get our tube feeding bags out to set up for the night. After pouring the formulas in, we hang the bags, attach the tubing, and adjust the pump rate for how long we'll be asleep. I fumble with mine and glance over at Stella to make sure I'm doing it right. It's been a minute since I've done it myself. After that, we prime the pump to get all the air out, our eyes meeting as we wait for the formula to make its way down the tube. I start to whistle the Jeopardy theme song while we wait, which makes her laugh. Don't look, she says when the formula gets to the end of the tube. She lifts her shirt up just high enough to attach her G-tube. I look away, hiding a grin, and inhale sharply, flexing the best I can while I lift up my shirt and attach the tube to the button sticking out of my abdomen. Glancing up, I catch her eye through the video chat. Take a picture. It'll last longer, I say, pulling down my shirt as she rolls her eyes. Her cheeks are just the tiniest bit red. I sit down on my bed, pulling my laptop closer to me. She yawns, picking her bun out, her long brown hair falling gently down over her shoulders. I try not to stare, but she looks good. More like her videos. Relaxed. Happy. You should get some sleep, I say as she rubs her eyes sleepily. You've had a packed few days bossing me around. She laughs, nodding. Good night, Will. Night, Stella, I say, hesitating before pressing the end call button and closing my laptop. I lie back, putting my hands behind my head, the room seeming uncomfortably quiet, even though it's still just me in here. But as I roll over and turn out the light, I realize for the first time in a long time, I don't really feel alone.
Chapter 9. Stella. Dr. Hamid frowns as I lift up my shirt, her dark eyebrows knitting together as she looks at the infected skin around my G-tube. I wince as she gently touches the inflamed red skin, and she mumbles an apology at my reaction. When I woke up this morning, I noticed the infection had gotten worse. When I saw the discharge oozing around the hole, I called her right away. After a minute of inspection, she finally stands, exhaling.
Let's try Bactroban and see how it looks in a day or two. Maybe we can clear it up, huh?
I pull my shirt down, shooting her a doubtful look. I've already been at the hospital a week, and while my fever is down and my sore throat is gone, this has only gotten worse. She reaches out and gives my arm a comforting squeeze. I hope she's right, though. Because if she's not, That means surgery. And that'd be the exact opposite of not worrying Mom and Dad. My phone begins to chirp away, and I look over, expecting it to be Will, but I see a message from my mom. Cafeteria for lunch? Meet me in 15? 15 means she's already on her way. I've been putting her off all week, telling her things are so routine she'd be bored, but she's not taking no for an answer this time. I shoot back a yes and sigh, standing up to get changed. Thanks, Dr. Hamid. She smiles at me as she leaves.
Keep me updated, Stella. Barb will keep an eye on it, too.
I pull on a clean pair of leggings and a sweatshirt, make a note to add Bactroban to the schedule in my app, then head up the elevator and across into Building 2. My mom is already standing outside the cafeteria when I get there, her hair in a messy ponytail, dark circles hanging heavily under her eyes. She looks thinner than I do. I give her a big hug, trying not to wince when she rubs against my G-tube.
Everything okay?
She asks, her eyes appraising me. I nod. Great. Treatments are a breeze, breathing better already. Everything okay with you? I ask, studying her face. She nods, giving me a big smile that doesn't quite reach her eyes.
Yep, everything's good.
We get in the long line and get our usuals, a Caesar salad for her, a burger and milkshake for me, and a heaping plate of French fries for us to share. We manage to grab a seat in the corner by the wide glass windows, a comfortable distance away from everyone else. I glance outside as we eat to see that the snow is still gently falling, a blanket of white steadily accumulating on the ground. I hope my mom leaves before it gets too bad out there. I finished my burger and 75% of the fries in the amount of time it takes my mom to eat about 3 bites of her salad. I watch as she picks at her food, face tired. She looks like she's been Googling again, up until the early hours of the morning, reading page after page, article after article, on lung transplants. My dad was the only one who used to be able to keep her calm, pulling her away from her worry spiral with just a look, comforting her in a way nothing else could. The divorce diet doesn't look good on you, Mom. She looks up at me, surprised.
What are you talking about?
You're too thin. Dad needs a bath. You guys are stealing my look. Can't you see you need each other? I want to say. She laughs, grabbing my milkshake.
No!
I shout as she takes a dramatic gulp. I dive across the table, trying to wrestle it back, but the lid flies off, chocolate milkshake absolutely covering the both of us. For the first time in a while, we completely crack up. My mom takes a pile of napkins, gently wiping the shake off my face, her eyes suddenly brimming with tears. I grab her hand, frowning.
Mom, what?
I look at you and think, they said you wouldn't. She shakes her head as she holds my face in both her hands, tears spilling out of her eyes.
But here you are, and you've grown, and beautiful. You keep proving them wrong.
She grabs a napkin, wiping away the tears.
I don't know what I'd do without you.
My insides turn cold. I don't know what I'd do without you. I swallow hard and give her hand a comforting squeeze, but my mind instantly travels to the G-tube, the spreadsheets, the app, a big 35% practically sitting on my chest. Until I get the transplant, that number isn't going back up. Until then, I'm the only one who can keep me alive. And I have to. I have to stay alive. Because I'm pretty sure keeping me alive is the only thing keeping my parents going. After my mom leaves, I head straight to the gym with Will, wanting to strengthen my weak lungs as much as I possibly can. I almost tell him not to come so I can think everything over, but I know he probably hasn't set foot in the gym in ages. Plus, the combined worry of my parents and that thought would be too much for me to allow me to concentrate on anything else. At least Will going to the gym is a problem I can solve immediately. I start pedaling on a stationary bike. I haven't minded my afternoon workouts ever since the gym became one of the nicest places in the entire hospital. They renovated it 3 years ago and practically quadrupled its size, putting in basketball courts, a saltwater pool, shiny new cardio equipment, and rows of free weights. There is even an entire separate room for yoga and meditating, with wide windows looking out over the courtyard. Before that, the gym here had been an old, dingy room with a handful of mismatched dumbbells and decaying equipment that looked like it was made about a year after the wheel had been invented. I look over to see Will holding on to a treadmill for dear life, gasping for breath as he power walks. His portable oxygen is slung over his shoulder in that classic, trendy CF-er exercising style. I practically dragged him here, and I have to admit, it's fun for me to see him concentrating too hard to be snarky. He couldn't even use his banned from leaving the third floor excuse, because Barb is on the night shift today, and Julie was more than enthusiastic to have Will off doing something that will actually improve his lung function and overall health.
So, when does this little deal of ours become mutually beneficial?
He manages to get out, looking across the entire room at me while I pedal away. He slows the speed down, gasping out words between breaths.
I've done everything you've asked with no return on my investment.
I'm gross, too sweaty, I say as a bead of sweat drips down my face. He slams the stop button on the treadmill, the machine halting abruptly as he spins around to face me, fixing his nose cannula as he struggles to catch his breath.
And my hair is dirty, and I'm too tired, and my med card is...
You want to draw me sweaty? Fine, I'll sweat harder. I start to pedal like my life depends on it, my RPM quadrupling. My lungs begin to burn, and I start coughing, oxygen hissing out of my cannula as I struggle for air. My legs slow down as I go into a coughing fit before finally catching my breath. He shakes his head. I immediately look back down at the glaring digital numbers on the bike, trying to ignore the red creeping slowly at my face. Afterward, we both exhaustedly make our way to the empty yoga room, me walking 6 feet ahead. I sit down against the wide windows, the glass cool from the blanket of white on the other side, covering everything in sight. Do I need to pose or anything? I ask, my hand reaching up as I fix my hair. I strike a dramatic pose, which makes him laugh. He pulls out his sketchbook and a charcoal pencil, surprising me as he puts on a pair of blue latex gloves.
Nah, just act natural.
Oh, good. Yeah, that'll be easy. I watch him, his deep blue eyes focused on the paper, his dark eyebrows furrowing as he concentrates. He looks up, meeting my eyes as he studies me again. I look away quickly, pulling my pocket notebook out and flipping to the page for today.
What's that?
He asks, pointing to the notebook with his pencil. My to-do list, I explain, crossing off number 12, work out, and heading to the very bottom of my list to write, Will Drawing.
A to-do list?
He asks.
Pretty old school for someone who builds apps.
Yeah, well, the app doesn't give me the satisfaction of doing this. I take my pencil and draw a line through Will Drawing.
He fakes a sad face.
Now that really hurts my feelings.
I duck my head, but he sees the smile I'm trying to hide.
So, what else is on the list?
He asks, looking back down at the drawing and then back up at me before starting to shade something in. Which list? I ask. My master list or my daily list? He laughs warmly, shaking his head.
Of course you have two lists.
Immediate and long-term, it makes sense, I shoot back, which only makes him smirk.
Hit me with the master list. That's the big stuff.
I flip through the pages, getting to the master list. I haven't looked at this page in a while. It's filled with different colored inks, reds and blues and blacks, and a couple of sparkly fluorescent colors from a gel pen kit I got back in sixth grade. Let's see here. My finger trails up to the top. Volunteer for an important political cause. Done. I draw a line through it. Study all the works of William Shakespeare. Done. I draw a line through that one. Share everything I know about CF with others. I have this, YouTube page. I draw a line through it and look up at Will to see him not at all surprised. Someone's been checking up on me.
So is your plan to die really, really smart so you can join the debate team of the dead?
He points out the window with his pencil.
You ever think about, I don't know, traveling the world or something?
I look back down to see number 27, Sistine Chapel with Abby. No line through it. I clear my throat, moving on. Learn to play the piano. Done. Speak fluent French. Will cuts me off.
Seriously, do you ever do anything off list? No offense, but none of that sounds fun.
I close the notebook and he continues.
You want to hear my list? Take a painting class with Bob Ross. Lots of happy little trees and cadmium yellow that you don't think will work, but then...
He's dead, I tell him. He gives me a lopsided grin.
Ah, well, then I guess I'll just have to settle for sex in the Vatican.
I roll my eyes at him. I think you have a better shot at meeting Bob Ross. He winks, but then his face gets serious. More serious than I've ever seen it.
Okay, okay. I'd like to travel the world and really get to see it, you know? Not just the inside of hospitals.
He looks back down and keeps sketching.
They're kind of all the same. Same generic rooms, same tile floors, same sterile smell. I've been everywhere without actually seeing anything.
I look at him. Really look, watching the way his hair falls into his eyes when he draws, the look of concentration on his face, no more smirking expression. I wonder what it would be like to go all around the world but never be able to get outside the walls of the hospital. I don't mind being in the hospital. I feel safe here, comfortable. But I've been coming to the same one pretty much my whole life. It's home. If I were in Cabo this past week but stuck inside a hospital, I wouldn't just be bummed. I'd be miserable. Thank you, I say.
For what?
He asks, looking up to meet my eyes. For saying something real. He watches me a second before running his fingers through his hair. He's the one who's uncomfortable for a change.
Your eyes are hazel,
he says, pointing at the sunlight trickling in through the glass all around me.
I didn't know that until I saw them in the sunlight. I thought they were brown.
My heart thumps loudly in my chest at his words and the warm way he's looking at me.
They're really nice eyes,
he says a second later, a faint red creeping onto his cheeks. He looks down, scribbling away and clearing his throat.
I mean to, like, draw.
I bite on my lower lip to hide my smile. For the first time, I feel the weight of every single inch, every millimeter of the 6 feet between us. I pull my sweatshirt closer to my body, looking away at the pile of yoga mats in the corner, trying to ignore the fact that that open space, it will always be there. That evening, I scroll through Facebook for the first time all day, looking at all the pictures my friends are posting from Cabo. I throw a heart onto Camila's new profile picture. She's standing on a surfboard in her striped bikini, a big, goofy smile on her face, her shoulders burnt to a crisp, all my SPF warnings utterly ignored. But Maya sent me a behind-the-scenes snap video earlier this afternoon, taken seconds after this picture, which revealed that Camila still has no clue how to surf. She may be balanced for about 3.5 seconds, shooting the camera a big smile before flailing off the surfboard a second later. I do a little victory dance when I scroll to a picture Mason posted, his tan arm slung around Maya's shoulder. I almost fall out of my chair when I see the caption, "Cabo Cutie." Grinning, I give it a quick like before closing the app to send her a text. "Way to go, Maya!" with heart eye emojis for days. I glance over to see my pocket notebook still open to my master list. My eyes are pulled back to number 27, Sistine Chapel with Abby. I open my laptop and my mouse hovers over a blue folder labeled Abs. I hesitate for a second before clicking on it, a sea of pictures and videos and artwork from my sister filling my screen. I click on a GoPro video she sent me 2 years ago, her balancing on top of a high, rickety bridge. The screen is filled with a dizzying image of the distance from where she's sitting to the river below, the water underneath her strong enough to overtake anything in its path. "Pretty crazy, huh, Stella?" she says as the camera swings back to her and she adjusts her harness one more time. "I thought you might like to see how this feels." She clicks her helmet in place, the GoPro view shifting back to show the edge of the bridge and the long, long way down. "And I brought my jumping buddy." She holds up my stuffed panda, the one right next to me now, giving him a big squeeze. "I'll hold him tight, don't worry." Then, without even a second thought, she launches herself off the bridge. I fly through the air with her, her delighted whoops echoing loudly through the speakers. Then comes the bounce. We fly back up, the panda's face coming onto the screen, Abby's voice breathless and giddy as she grips the panda tightly, screaming out, "Happy birthday, Stella!" Swallowing hard, I slam the laptop shut, knocking over a can of soda on the side table. The bubbling cola spills out all over the table and the floor. Great. I reach down to pick up the can, hopping over the puddle, and toss it into the trash bin on my way out into the hall. As I walk around the nurse's station, I notice Barb dozing off in a chair, her head lolling to one side, her mouth slightly open. Carefully, I open the door to the janitor's closet, grabbing the paper towels from a packed shelf of cleaning supplies and trying not to wake her. She hears me, though, and looks up, her eyes sleepy. "You work too hard," I say when she sees me. She smiles and opens her arms like she used to when I was younger and having a rough day at the hospital. I climb onto her lap like a child and wrap my arms around her neck, smelling the familiar, safe, vanilla scent of her perfume. Resting my head on her shoulder, I close my eyes and pretend.
Chapter 10. Will. Siva Flomalin time. Julie sings, swinging my door open the next morning, a bag of medicine in her hand. I nod. I already got the notification from Stella's app and moved from the desk over to my bed where the IV rack is, waiting for her arrival. I watch as Julie hangs the bag, taking the IV line and turning toward me. Her eyes travel to the drawing I did of Stella in the yoga room, hanging next to the lung drawing Stella had put up above my desk, the corner of her lip turning up as she looks at it. "I like seeing you like this," she says, her eyes meeting mine. "Like how?" I ask, pulling down the neck of my shirt. She inserts the IV line into a port on my chest. "Hopeful." I think about Stella, my eyes traveling to the IV bag of sevoflomalin. I reach out to touch it gently, feeling the weight of the bag in my palm. The trial is so new, still too new to know how this will turn out. It's the first time I've even let myself think about it, which might be dangerous, or even stupid. I don't know. Getting my hopes up when a hospital is involved doesn't seem like a good idea to me. "What if this doesn't work?" I ask. I don't feel any different. Not yet, at least. I watch the IV bag, the steady drip, drip, drip of the medicine working its way into my body. I look back at Julie, the both of us silent for a moment. "But what if it does?" she asks, touching my shoulder. I watch her leave. "But what if it does?" After the IV drip, I carefully slide on a pair of bright blue gloves, making sure to keep my B. sepatia germs far away from anything Stella will touch. I take one more look at my drawing from the yoga room earlier, carefully evaluating it as I pull it down off the wall. It's a cartoon, but it's definitely Stella. She's in a white doctor's coat, a stethoscope slung around her neck, her small cartoon hands resting angrily on her hips. Squinting at the drawing, I realize it's missing something. Aha! I grab red, orange, and yellow pencils and draw fire coming out of her mouth. Way more realistic. Laughing to myself, I take a manila envelope that I stole from the nurse's station, slide the drawing inside, and scrawl on the outside. "Inside, you'll find my heart and soul. Be kind." I walk down the hall to her room, picturing her opening the envelope, expecting something profound and deep. I look both ways before slipping it under the door and lean against the wall, listening. I hear her soft footsteps on the other side of the door, the sound of her snapping gloves on, then bending over to grab the envelope. There's silence, more silence, and finally, a laugh, a real, genuine, warm laugh. Victory. I walk back down the hall, whistling, sliding onto my bed and grabbing my phone as FaceTime pings, a call coming in from Stella, just like I hoped. I answer it, her face appearing, her pink lips turning up at the corners. "A dragon lady? So sexist." "Hey, you're lucky you said no nudes." She laughs again, looking at the drawing and then back at me. "Why cartoons? They're subversive, you know? They can look light and fun on the outside, but they have a punch. I could talk about this all day. If there's anything I'm passionate about, this would be it." I hold up a book that's on my nightstand that has some of the best New York Times political cartoons. Politics, religion, society. I think a well-drawn cartoon can say more than words ever could, you know? It could change minds. She looks at me, surprised, not saying anything. I shrug, realizing how hard I just nerded out. "I mean, I'm just a wannabe cartoonist. What do I know?" I point at the drawing behind her, a beautiful picture of lungs, flowers pouring out of the inside, a backdrop of stars behind them. "Now that is art." I pull my laptop closer to me, realizing what it means. "Healthy lungs. That's brilliant. Who did it?" She looks back at it, pausing. "My older sister, Abby." "That's some talent. I'd love to take a look at her other work." A strange look comes onto her face, and her voice turns cold. "Look, we're not friends. We're not sharing our stories. This is just about doing our treatments, okay?" The call ends abruptly, my own confused face swinging into view. What the hell was that? I jump up, angry, and throw open the door to my room. Storming down the hallway, I make a beeline for her door, ready to give her a piece of my mind. She can kiss my... "Hey, Will," a voice says behind me. I swing around, surprised to see Hope and Jason walking toward me. I was texting Jason like an hour ago, and I still totally forgot they were coming today, like they always do on Fridays. Jason holds up a bag of food, grinning at me as the smell of fries from my favorite diner a block away from our school wafts down the hallway, trying to reel me in. I freeze, looking between Stella's door and my visitors. And that's when it hits me. I've seen both her parents come and go. I saw her friends visiting her the first day she got here. But Abby? She hasn't even talked about Abby. Where has Abby been? I walk up to Hope and Jason, grabbing the bag and nodding for them to follow me into my room. Come with me. I throw open my laptop, the two of them standing behind me as it boots up, surprised expressions on their faces. Nice to see you too, dude, Jason says, peering over my shoulder. So, I met a girl, I say, facing both of them. I shake my head when Hope gives me one of those smiles, her eyes excited. Jason is completely up to date on all things Stella, but I haven't filled Hope in yet, mostly because I knew she'd react like this. Not like that. Okay, maybe like that, but it can't be like that. Whatever. I swing back to my computer, opening the tab to Stella's YouTube page and scrolling to a video from last year labeled Polypectomy Party. I click on it before slamming my spacebar to pause the video and spinning around to fill them in. She's got CF, and she's like a crazy control freak. She's made me start doing my treatments all the way and everything. Relief fills Hope's eyes, and Jason is positively beaming. You've started doing your treatments again? Will, that's awesome, Hope gushes. I wave her praise away, even though I'm a little surprised it got this big of a reaction. Hope pestered me about it for a while, but when I told them to leave it alone, they didn't make a big deal about it. I sort of thought we were all on the same page. But now they both look so relieved. I frown. I don't want to get their hopes up. Yeah. Anyway, get this. She has a sister named Abby. I fast forward to a few minutes in, pressing play so they can both watch. Stella and Abby are sitting in a hospital room, artwork lining the walls like in her room now. Dr. Hamid is there, a stethoscope pressed to Stella's chest as she listens to her lungs. Stella's legs are shaking anxiously as she looks between Dr. Hamid and the camera. Okay, so I'm having a nasal polypectomy, Dr. Hamid says, straightening up. We're removing polyps from your nasal passages. Stella grins at the camera. I'm trying to talk the doc into a nose job while she's in there. Abby gives her a big hug, squeezing her tightly. Stella's nervous, but I'll be here to sing her to sleep, just like always. She starts to sing, her voice soft and sweet. I love you, a bushel and a peck. Stop, Stella says, clamping her hand down over her sister's mouth. You'll jinx it. I hit pause on the video, swinging around to face my friends. They both look confused, clearly not getting the realization that just came to me. They look at each other, eyebrows raised, and then Hope gives me a big smile, leaning over to squint at the sidebar. You watched all her videos? I ignore her. Well, she just freaked out like 5 minutes ago when I asked to see more of her sister's art. That video was last year, I say as an explanation. Okay, and? Jason asks, frowning. Abby's not in any of the videos after this. They nod, slowly catching on. Hope pulls out her phone, frowning as she taps away. I found Abby Grant's Instagram. It's mostly art and her and Stella. She looks up at me, nodding. But you're right. She hasn't posted in a year. I look from Jason to Hope, then back again. I think something happened to Abby. The next afternoon, my phone buzzes noisily, reminding me of an exercise session Stella programmed into my regimen. I haven't seen her since I figured out something happened with Abby, and the thought of seeing her in just a few minutes is making me weirdly nervous. I couldn't really enjoy the rest of the visit with Hope and Jason, even as we ate fries and talked about the latest post-Thanksgiving school drama over the new episode of Westworld. We always watch the new episodes together, even if I'm on an entirely different continent in another time zone and need to Skype them. Taking a deep breath, I head to the gym to meet Stella, pushing open the door and walking past the rows of treadmills and ellipticals and stationary bikes. Peeking into the yoga room, I see her sitting on a green mat, meditating, her legs crossed, her eyes closed. Slowly I push open the door, walking as quietly as I can to a mat across the room from her, 6 feet away. I sit down and watch how peaceful she looks, her face soft and calm, but her eyes slowly open to meet mine and she stiffens. Barb didn't see you, did she? Abby's dead, isn't she? I blurt out, cutting right to the point. She stares at me, not saying anything. Finally, she swallows, shaking her head. Real nice, Will. About as delicate as a jackhammer. Who has time for delicacy, Stella? We clearly don't. Stop, she says, cutting me off. Stop reminding me that I'm dying. I know that I'm dying. She shakes her head, her face serious.